You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, our next guest is a previous guest. We've had him, I think it was 2007 he was on the show. Boy, I just thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I was listening to it the other day, and I just thought that was a fantastic time, a fantastic interview with a fantastic guy. And he's joining us one more time here on The Drew Marshall Show, the one and only actor, author, speaker, and, well, he's a creative person. Very, very creative, and I would say he's probably one of the most synergistically interdependent guys I know, Mr. Tom Sullivan. Tom, how are you?
No one on this planet has ever introduced me by saying synergistically interdependent. Wow. And this coming from a man who has just lived in the world of darkness.
Do you think that there would be blind people who will hear about me going blind for a week and think, oh, what a dork?
Yeah. About half.
Okay.
You're going to hit about half. I think it is absolutely fantastic. And I've been thinking about this all week because I think the perspective you offer your audience and also all of us who happen to be blind is fantastic. So I was thinking about this a lot. First of all, the most obvious, what if anything scared you?
There's a difference between being alone and being all by myself alone.
But you're an artist, and we're never good at being alone.
No, you're right, and I didn't realize that. I mean, James Taylor's got a great line in one of his songs, All By Myself Alone, basically, is what he's talking about.
And
when I'm alone with distraction, with music or with my guitar walking through bush and being distracted by looking at nature is one thing. And totally different to be all by yourself alone, looking at nothing, distracted by nothing. And I don't do well looking into my own soul that deeply.
What about the sense in that loneliness of being dependent? Did you feel that?
Of being dependent?
Yeah, meaning, okay, so let's assume for a second you're alone in your living room.
Yes.
You're not yet good at mobility.
Right.
In under blindfold. And you decide you want to go to the kitchen and get a beer.
Yeah.
Did you feel that sense of trepidation or awkwardness because you now are wondering whether you can move freely in space and go get it?
In my own house, not as much, but outside, yes. Definitely outside, yes. But what happened was, Tom, there was a brain fatigue that happened. I was just mentally exhausted to the point where the first 2 days it was kind of cool. You know, there was a novelty thing. The third day, a bit of frustration creeped in. The fourth day, a lot of frustration creeped in. The fifth day, I was just ticked right off. The sixth day, I was flat out depressed.
Yeah.
Flat out depressed.
And see, this is, even though I've lived my whole life blind, I have moments like that even now. When I go on the road and you check into a strange hotel room, in my case, because people are thinking they're being nice to me, they'll check me into a big suite.
Oh, yeah.
So now you got a living room and a bedroom, and you're praying to God at 2 in the morning, if you've had a couple of beers and you wake up and you have to take a pee, that you can find it. And I have gone in closets and then had to blame the... And call downstairs and say, oh, I'm so sorry, my guide dog had an accident.
Yeah.
It is really a trip, boy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That is a trip. Sorry, blame the dog, always. And these are secrets for you. Always blame the dog.
Yeah.
Always blame the cane.
Yes.
And if you can, blame your parents.
Yes.
Blame anyone else you can blame.
Yes. Well, as North Americans, we're professionals at blame shifting, so.
That's right. Now, what about the sensory stuff? Talk about the plug-in to senses.
Hold on. Who's interviewing who here?
I'm interviewing you. This
Good
is a reverse
night.
Process.
All right. The sensory thing. Well, I think the brain fatigue happened because I was forced to use only my ears. Touch was obviously, I put my hand in more. I mean, basically the first meal that I ate after church, we went out for some chicken meal, a Swiss Chalet up here, and I basically ate with my hands. I just shoveled.
Oh, I'll bet you were just a mess.
Yeah.
I hope people didn't come up to you and say, oh, you're Drew Marshall. actually,
they did.
Oh, God. Oh, well, what? You know, then you go through that thing, well, why is he in a blindfold?
Yes, Well, you know what? No one knew, because I didn't have a blindfold on. What I had was contact lenses that blocked out all of my vision.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had some sunglasses on. So basically, if someone saw me, I really held the cane up high so they didn't think I was trying to be cool. You know, one of those guys from the 80s with a mullet on who wore sunglasses inside all the time.
We did this with Ben Affleck when I was doing Daredevil. You know, put him in dark glasses and lenses. And it was fascinating to watch both sides of what happened to him. On the one hand, he became very sensorily aware. On the other hand, he became incredibly fearful. And so, you know, that's why I've always said, here I was, born blind. That's a picnic compared to the guys who lose it along the way.
Well, he was probably fearful just because he kept showing up hungover.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well... Yeah, he brought Jennifer Lopez to the set, and I said to him, Ben, doesn't it seem reasonable to you that since I'm blind and I'll never know how beautiful Jennifer Lopez is, you should arrange for me to sort of get a hug or a grope or something? And he actually called her over and said, Jennifer, back that thing up so we can... It was a wonderful moment.
I got to say, the last thing I saw before I put my contacts in, was an episode of MASH.
Oh.
Where Hawkeye lost his vision because the heater in one of the girls, the nurse's tents, exploded into his eyes, and he ended up going, you know, into surgery for it, and he had to go into the casualty ward, and there was another guy beside him in the bunk who had his eyes, I guess, messed up because of something in the war.
Right.
Do you know the name of that actor?
I do know that fella. I do know that fella, and I'll tell you, I owe Alan Alda so much, because it was the first performance I ever gave as an actor on television, and I was panicked. And Alda, we're both laying in the bunks, and Alda leaned over and he said, hey, kid, listen, just talk to me, will you? Don't act, because you're not very good at it, so just talk. Yeah, I've been so blessed in that way to as an actor. But I, before we go to Tom, because Tom's boring, what about the sense question, though? I want to know, over the course of 6 days, did you find a sharpening? Did the senses sharpen?
You know, I don't know. No, I don't. I wouldn't say that the senses sharpened. I think I just got used to using my ears for the mundane things that I never had to use my ears for. I was really good with the cane. I mean, my right wrist was really sore at the end of the week or the end of a day because I used it so much. I was so scared of walking into something, I'd just go back and forth, right?
Yeah.
But no, I don't. People would say, well, did your senses increase? No, I don't think that stuff happens.
I sort of set you up for it because I'm delighted you said that. See, this is my point with children. So many of the books I've written, and even the new one that I've got coming out now, this Alive Day, is really dedicated to the idea that you can turn the senses up. And most folks never, ever grow. There's so much to learn in touch and smell and sound and taste. And if we did more educationally, especially with kids, we would be so much more plugged in as a society. You know, I'm a runner.
Yes.
So I was down on the beach running today with the guide dog.
And how many different types of waves did you hear?
You're ahead of me. 15. 15 today. All the way from the ones that roll in under, you know, at low tide that sound like a cannonade in a war zone, to the ones at high tide that sound like Joe Frazier just hit Muhammad Ali with a body shot. You know? I mean, they're fantastic things. And I said to my son the other day, he was talking about this new girl he was dating, and I said, Sully, have you listened to her smile? And he thought I was an idiot. I said, no, think about it. And he's an excellent musician, and he started to ponder that, and he said, you know, it's right. You can hear the sound of a smile, and it's a beautiful sound. So, but the point is, you did just now, get to use your senses more appropriately. And I think that's really the whole trip. That's why, you know, you asked me once, did I have any regrets about being blind? And I said to you back then, no, because I've never met an ugly person unless they wanted to be.
Yep. And that certainly came to the forefront for me, Tom. I realized probably a little bit when I was blind, but heaps more afterwards, how judgmental I am based on other people's mannerisms or looks.
Well, that brings up another one. How about you? Did anybody seem to patronize you under the label blind?
No, they didn't patronize me because I was so terrified that people would treat me all... They were going to treat me all blindy.
And, very good. Yeah. You know, you really are going to be one of us.
I was afraid they're going to treat me all blindy and then find out it was just an experiment and then hit me. You know, just be, it was almost like I set them up for something, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to betray people's connection with me in those moments. So I was pretty quick to let people know what was going on. But what
one of my favorite stories, and I know you and I always go on these trips of fancy, but when I was working for Good Morning America, the movie 10 came out. This was in the early 80s. And I got assigned to interview Bo Derek.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah, which is exactly what the guys around the water crew were saying. The camera guys were saying stuff like, gee, we're going to send some blind dummy out to interview Bo. What the hell waste of time is that? So I go to the interview, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to pull a Drew Marshall. I've got to be smart. I'm going to ask a question that's going to rock her on her butt, her lovely butt. And so the camera rolled, and I said, Bo, you know, people tell me you're a perfect physical 10, but I can't look at you, so why should I like you?
Oh, buddy. That was awesome.
Home run, don't you think?
Yeah, what'd she say?
She started to cry.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. She said, you know what? That's the sadness, isn't it? Nobody will look past my label, and I know I'm making a fortune from it. But nobody's interested that I'm getting a master's in English lit, or that I'm interested in animals,
wow,
or that I'm environmentally involved, or that I love my husband. And she went through a list of stuff. And then I was the one rocked because I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe, just maybe, we all carry incorrect overviews of ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
All of us.
Oh, Tom, that just must have been... very powerful. Almost as powerful as you on the ski hill with your son. With your son.
Yeah, you saw that piece.
And you end up, he says, Dad, are you crying? Yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah. The story was, that's right. I said to him, Sully, what does it mean when people say that I can't see? And he said,
they're handicapped.
Yeah. Little boy looking up over his glasses, right, with the snow on the lenses going, doesn't mean anything. You know, like, I'll tell you what it means. And I just lost it.
Yeah.
I just broke down.
Don't you call my dad handicapped.
That's right. Yeah. And now, you know what? Just shows you how now he's in his early 30s and we're out on the golf course and I hit a bad shot and he'll say, geez, you hit that like a blind guy.
Nice. Well, maybe, I don't know, who are you with these days? I know it's not Nelson. Edison still around?
Yeah, Edison.
But Edison just goes get your golf ball, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the great thing about that is we can go out and play at midnight because I pour aftershave all over the balls and hit them, and Edison goes, gets them, and brings them back. It's a really good way to practice. Golf course is ours. You know, nobody bothers us.
There's an Arnold Palmer joke in here somewhere, isn't there?
Well, actually, that is a true story.
I know. I saw it on Carson.
Yeah. I mean, that's a true story about saying, Arnold, what do we, you know, I'll bet you $10,000 to play, and the, well, when? After midnight on any course you choose.
Oh, that story. I thought you were talking about Mrs. Arnold.
Oh, Mrs.
Yeah,
I have seen that piece, but I think you have a Christian show here.
Yes, I know.
I think you're just about to cross the line, and I won't mind coming to Canada to replace you.
Thank you very much.
That's all right.
Speaking of crossing the line, how's your marriage to Patty these days?
You know what's wonderful about that? We've been married 40 years this month.
Good for you.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this a lot because I'm trying to figure out how much money I have to spend on this one. And there's magic in things that relate to any couple who really finds it. Things like this morning sitting having a cup of coffee and having the kind of conversation that only two people in love can have. About everything, about us, about life, about The inside jokes, the way two people who know so much about each other. Last night we went out to a movie and dinner, and just having the time, you know, to hold her hand in a dark theater and enjoy the movie together and stuff. The fact that we can walk on the golf course at twilight and she lines the shots up for me and knows how much it matters, so she doesn't say anything. Hmm. You know, she just knows that I like the idea of being isolated and working on the game. The fact that I take as much interest in sharing her love of art as it's possible for me to take, because it's Patty's love. You know, it's what she loves. And I think in the passion years, you don't have all that. You're raising children. You're also, you know, on the passion side of love. When God allows you to find the intimacy and elegance of mature love.
Oh, well said.
You're so much better off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I look...
No, I was just going to say thank God for Betty White then, ultimately.
Well, you know, that's a great story, that Betty brought us together. I was playing in a bar on Cape Cod and hitting on every girl that walked through the door with lines that were devastating.
Give us one.
Okay. I'm playing the piano and a girl comes in and she says, "Oh, can you play The Look of Love?" And I do. And I know that she's looking at me and she said, "Do you mind if I ask how you went blind?" And I said, "Well, I don't like to talk about it, but I was an F-4 pilot in Vietnam and got shot down and spent 5 years in Haiphong prison, and you're the first woman I've met since I came home." I mean, to all the veterans who deserve so much better than that.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know.
Oh, wow.
So Betty came up. Betty White and Alan Ludman come to Cape Cod to do summer stock. And they used to come into the club where I played every night and have clam chowder and a drink. And Betty was watching this, and she finally came up to me one night, and she said, "Young man, you must be the stupidest SOB that's ever lived." I said, "Ma'am?" She said, "If you could see the eyes and the smile on the girl that sits in the front row night after night, you would never waste your time on any of these bimbos." And Patty and I married 8 months later. You know, it's just, so I owe Betty the world. And as you know, last time I was with you, Betty and I had just written together, the book together.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've just finished the second in that series, Alive Day, that I'm, I'll tell you what, Drew, your experience is so much a part of this. The second book in this novel series that comes out in June is basically the story of a very successful young guy who's going to med school, who gets hurt in a mountain climbing accident and goes blind, and a dog that nobody wanted that becomes his guide dog. And it's basically the story of how these two rehabilitate each other.
Nice.
And I'm incredibly proud of it. And so there'll be four of these books, the one that you and I talked about before, together, and now Alive Day. And thank God they keep paying me to write books and make movies.
Well, did you ever get to writing that book, On My Father's Back Porch?
Yes. Actually, that's something that's probably 2 years away, but I've actually written about 9 chapters. And as you know, my dad was this larger-than-life Boston Irish politician who was the director. He was campaign director for the Kennedy family. He owned 9 Irish pubs. He was Boston's leading bookie. Ted Williams was his business partner, so I grew up with fighters and bookies and bank robbers. When I went to Harvard, you know, they said you had to pay your tuition. He showed up with $25,000 in small unmarked bills. You know, and on every Sunday morning, my father's friends would gather on his porch, and I used to sit under the big upright piano on the floor and just listen to the deals between the politicians, the cops, I'm not sure. You know, it's funny. I've written 9 chapters, but you know what I really think? I think it's going to end up a play.
Hmm.
I think it'll end up a play because it has that dialogue feel. And though it reads well as a book, I think it'll read better as a play.
Well, I've already got The producer, you'll be, of course, be a head producer. Associate producer would be Kathy Lee Gifford, and playing the lead would be John Schneider. another good friend of Betty White's.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, Kathy Lee and I did Good Morning America together when she was there, and then I hosted Live with Regis and Kathy for 2 weeks.
Did you really?
Yeah, I know her well. She's interesting. She's leaving the Today Show, which I found.
Yeah, she's doing great. She's really found a perfect niche. I mean, her and Hoda, they are a great combination. You know, I'm not hugely into mid-morning or, you know, late afternoon TV because it's mostly for chicks.
Yeah.
And
People with strong metrosexual
tendencies. That's right.
Yeah.
But I've tuned in a number of times and I've just sort of sat back and went, oh, you're in it. This is just, you're in it. This is so you. So she's actually going to come on May 2nd. She's back on our show again. So
give her my best because she's really, you know, through all the fire of faith and challenge, she's done a magnificent job.
On my index page on my website, I have a list of headshots of various celebrities that have been on the show, and she will always have the number one spot. Always, always, always.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Well, listen, if you want to, you can tell me I'm on that page, but I'll never know.
You are a sick person, you know that?
Yeah.
The kids, Blythe and Tom Jr., or Sully, as you're calling them.
Yep.
How are they doing? How old are they now?
Well, it's really interesting. Blythe, our daughter, has a big, big job at Paramount Studios. And she manages studio, not acquisition, but the use of the studio property. So a television series that's shooting on the lot, she kind of defines or fulfills the contracts of everything they need. It's a big job. So I have a movie in major development at Paramount now. So about a month ago, she came home and she said, Dad, we have to have a drink. I said, oh, yeah?
Uh-oh.
So I went over to the bar. I poured my Jameson's on the rocks, and she poured a vodka tonic.
Was it a 1780?
You betcha. You betcha. Or Redbreast, which is another one of their brands.
Yes, sir.
Used to be McCallum when I was making a lot of money. So she sat down, and she said, now, Dad, I know that you have a movie here at Paramount, and I just need to tell you, you can't expect any favoritism.
Wow.
I said, how do you feel about being left out of the will? Can we even this out? And then Sully is still making music, but he calls himself a minimalist.
Hmm.
He's a general contractor to make money, and he does incredible home remodels. But he may call me on Tuesday and say, hey, Dad, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, where are you going? Indonesia, you know? He's a world-class surfer, and he follows the surf.
Good for him.
You know, he's taught me a lot. I've been so driven all my life. And it's not that he doesn't want success, but he approaches it. It's great to be a dad and learn from your kids.
You've just described the epitome of parenthood.
It is, especially, you know, when they get into their early 30s and you realize that what they're really telling you is that they think you're full of crap.
Yeah. Oh, it took your kids that long to say that, did it? Early 30s?
No, it happened when they were 10 or 11,
right.
But I didn't pay attention to it.
Yeah. You know, you said one time to me that the divorce rate for families of blind children is like something like 75%.
83.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's because the stress on families under these circumstances becomes extraordinary. When you realize that, well, let me frame it this way for you. I've talked to parents, and you'll run across a mother who'll say, you know, there used to be, let's say her name is Joan. There used to be Joan Miller, and now there's just Charlie's mother. That what happens so often is that the mothers lose identity. And their identity is absorbed in being the mother of a multi-disabled blind child. Because, you see, with blindness now, there aren't that many Tom Sullivans being born. Most of the kids, because we're saving them with premature birth issues, are developmentally delayed. And we're seeing tremendous amounts of autism and physical delay.
Wow.
And so the stress on families has become so profoundly acute. if somebody said to me, I've never said this to you, but if somebody said to me, what is it that I want my life to have represented when I'm dead? It's that I hope someday someone writes, you know, Tom was a husband, father, singer, actor, athlete, humanitarian, community citizen, who, by the way, happened to be blind. If I can move, which seems incongruous, you know, because I've made a hell of a living being blind. But if I can move the label down, I'll feel a tremendous sense of justification for having been on the planet, you know, and that's a central piece of my hopes and dreams. I'll tell you an interesting thing. We just this week achieved something that I'm more proud of. Do you know that in America, and I think in Canada, up till now, a disabled person could not buy standardized insurance without restriction based around the disability. So if you were blind and you bought a whole life or term policy, you couldn't. They would make exceptions throughout the insurance piece as to whether the blindness contributed to your death or to your accident or to your whatever it might be.
Is that unfair?
Oh, totally unfair. Totally unfair, because it gave the insurance companies an out. You know, a constant. So they'd take your premium, and then they'd find a way easily to abstract you. I've spent 30 years screaming about this, and finally, through a whole bunch of friends of mine, we formed a little company called 54 Freedom on a website. You can go there. And we finally found Lloyd's of London has now written coverage for accident and health and life. And for the first time, any disabled person in America is going to be able to buy standardized insurance with no restriction.
Good for you.
I'm really pumped about it.
Good for you.
It's part of...
Because you really haven't had that many accomplishments, so good for you for getting this one.
Yeah, nice to get a job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, never really had a job, you know.
All this playing around and golfing and bungee jumping and skiing and...
Yeah, the things that... It is interesting, though. You know, we kid about jobs. I've been truly an entrepreneur, a self-employed person all my life, and I wouldn't change it. I'm not equipped to work inside a corporation, which is probably why ABC didn't renew my contract.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that came to my mind was, where are the blind people? Where are they? I don't see them. We did a shot downtown where I crossed at an intersection about two or three times, different sequences, different time slots, just to see how people would, whether they would help or what they would say or how many people would just walk past. And there was no beeper thing going. It was just, I had to figure out when the color changed via help from
the
amazing Kreskin.
Yeah.
And it was a very interesting segment. And then I thought afterwards, where are the blind people? I don't see them out and about.
I'm really glad you brought this up because it's the same in Canada. In America, only 12% of the blind adult population holds jobs.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking in America, we're talking about, you know, 9% unemployment right now. The fact that only 12%, in the world of blindness, 88% of the working adults who could work don't have jobs. And it's because the system in our country hasn't worked. Inclusion, that is, educationally hasn't worked. The whole mainstream concept hasn't worked. Social integration hasn't worked. Now, much of it is because of the complication of blindness today, in many cases. But most of it has to do with the unwillingness of corporations to do the kind of training that's necessary to place people who, by the way, will probably be phenomenal employees in place. And it breaks my heart. I know in the next segment or a couple of segments from now, you're going to have the blind boys from Alabama.
Right after you.
And these guys were such legendary achievers. And yet, if you said to them, is there anything else you might like to have done other than music? All of us would say, you know, where were our tickets out of darkness? Well, for me, there were three: music, academics, and sports. You know, that was... I was the blessed one.
You can't say sports. Come on. That Sullivan over Asimov competition was totally unfair.
That's right.
Hold on. You got to let our listeners in on this one.
Okay.
Funniest story I've heard in 10 years.
I was I got involved in wrestling. It's a contact sport. And I lost the first 15 matches in 2 minutes and 46 seconds. I was tragic. But when I realized I could just operate trying to do the best job possible, I started to win. And I won a lot. I'm in the Hall of Fame and things. But I was competing in the World Games against a kid from the Soviet Union, and the score was 11-3. The Russian was ahead. Every time he knocked me down again, I'm telling you, it hurt. And I happen to have now prosthetic, that is plastic eyes. You take them out at night like contacts. So the next time he pounded my head into the mat, I thought, I've got to win somehow. So I just reached up and popped out one of the little suckers and dropped it on the mat and said, stop. He went, why? I said, I lost my eye. And the kid looked down and went, and threw up all over the mat. And it still says, Tim is laughing in the background, I hear him. It still says Sullivan over Asmanoff by default. And that is turning disadvantage into advantage.
You have some of the best stories. You really do.
Well, I'm Irish, for God's sake.
Oh, I know.
That's what we do.
You told me.
I did.
You told me that Alan Alda was a consummate, that Robin Williams was astounding, that Michael Langdon was committed, that Johnny Carson was shy. We didn't talk about Ed McMahon because I know he's not doing well.
No, and I have had so many wonderful moments with Ed. Ed used to host the Ed McMahon Golf Tournament in Moline, Illinois, and I would go back and play in it every year. I remember arriving on the first day, but the next two or three were sort of hazy.
Yes.
Because Ed could party. He could tell more stories. He was the most raconteur, wonderful man to be around. And there are things about Ed that people don't remember. Ed was a World War II Marine. Ed flew 140-something combat missions.
Wow.
Ed had lost a son, suicidal circumstance. Ed was the finest, gave more to others than any celebrity I've known. One of my favorite moments with Ed, that was going to be a pilot for a show called Ed's Place, and it never got on the air because it was so rude. And a lot of us did it, and the theory was we'd sat at a bar, and it was just stories. And Ed was the bartender, and they let us drink real booze. And we were all loaded, and Paul Williams was at the end of the bar, you know, the little Paul Williams that wrote so many hits.
Was he on a booster, maybe a telephone book or something?
Kind of.
Yeah.
And Pat McCormick, the head writer for The Tonight Show, it was about 6'7 and about 3'10. And right in the middle of this wonderful night of stories, Pat McCormick walked down and he got his hand under Paul Williams' butt and picked him up in the air and said to Ed, I'm proud to accept this on behalf of the Academy. So, you know, my prayers are so with Ed now. I talked to him about 2 months ago, I guess. It's just the idea that his life may or may end in the way it is is absolutely heartbreaking. And a lot of us in show business who've loved him are both praying for him and supporting him.
Tom, when you speak, I listen. I mean, I've got ADDF, JKB, CDF. I've got whatever it is, I've got them all.
Yeah.
But when you speak, I listen. You have a passion and an authenticness about you that is rare, very, very rare, especially considering the industry that you're in. And I just want to thank you for being so inspirational to so many. I know you hear that a lot, but I want you to hear it from me. Because of the week that I just went through, I mean, I don't want to turn this into a Hallmark moment, but it just means so much more what you say now to me.
Well, we're going to be friends for life, and your audience is lucky to have you there. I've said this, and I'm not embarrassed about it. And I did what you do for a living. You're the single most prepared interviewer in the world of radio or television today, and the fact that you can pull it up with memory banks, the fact that you can draw on information that you've worked on really says a lot for a man who may drink too much.
Boy. You know, after this experiment of being blind for a week, I still feel ignored by God, but not abandoned.
Now, there's an interesting conversation there, and maybe it's a good way for us to go out.
Yeah.
Here's a point. Okay, so I had times when I railed at God and couldn't come to terms with the idea that I was the best at being blind in so many areas and the worst at being sighted. That was the view I took. And then I realized that had I been sighted, I would have stayed in Boston, probably gone to law school or something, would not have been a writer or an artist, would not have worked so hard to make a difference in the lives of others in the way I've been blessed to, would not have been plugged into the senses as I am, would not have had the life that I've had. So I think it's a question, and here's the real kicker. Had I been born in 1945, I would have been dead because they didn't have incubators. Had I been born in 1952, I would have been able to see. God slotted me exactly where I belonged.
So you see intentionality?
Absolutely. I think we have absolute free will, and I think with kids who have cancer and all the rest, I think that's all genetics and environment. But I do see intentionality in the placement.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think would fit with most faith-driven ideas.
Yeah.
And so I'm very comfortable about that.
Well, I see intentionality in the fact, just the pure fact that our lives have crossed paths.
Hey, well, listen, come down here and visit me in Southern California and sit on my beach, and by the time you leave, I'll send you back Irish.
Listen, I'm halfway there.
Okay.
From County Tyrone we are from.
That's God love you. All right.
Tom, always good to chat with you. I love your heart.
Thank you, Drew. I love yours.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye. Tom Sullivan on the Drew Marshall Show. You can see why we brought him back yet one more time, especially this week after we're sort of debriefing from my week of blind sacrifice. Those videos are online for your viewing pleasure. DrewMarshall.ca. We did a sort of an 8 to 10 minute video each day I was blind last week, or the, I guess it was the week before. I don't know. I've lost track of time now. Coming up next, these guys, the Blind Boys of Alabama, Grammy Award winners on the Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
I love your directness, so I'll listen to the show again.